Welcome into Scoops with DannyMac.com and Ben Fred Fridays, my weekly visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and a contributor to KTRS Radio. This is presented by the National Children's Cancer Society, Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill, Hair Saloon for Men, Design Air Heating and Cooling, Ryan Kelly, the home loan expert, and by Schnucks. We're coming to you from the Lou Fuse Automotive Studios on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Reminder, the 7th annual Evening with the Cardinals coming up on Saturday, January 26th, so just about a week away, and it's presented by the National Children's Cancer Society. I'll be emceeing, and the featured guests will be Cardinals Hall of Famers Jim Edmonds and Chris Carpenter. Also, special VIP reception featuring the president of baseball operations, John Mozeliak. To be a sponsor or to get your tickets, head to thenccs.org. That's thenccs.org. The event has raised over $1.3 million for families battling childhood cancer. And again, the event coming up January 26th. A lot to get into with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We'll talk about his article concerning the Major League Baseball Players Association and MLB. We'll get into St. Louis University. They've got St. Joe's at Chaffetz Arena tonight. And also, we'll get into MLS and my podcast with Carolyn Kendall Betts and Jim Cavanaugh, some of the takeaways from that. All that coming up. Ben Fred Fridays on Scoops with DannyMac.com.
Hi, I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. There's never been a better time to look at a refinance. Maybe it's time to get rid of the PMI or get some cash out to pay off the credit cards. 5 minutes could save you $500 a month. Thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
I'm pretty sure I don't need to remind you that you're going to need the right food, drinks, and snacks for the big game. I do want to suggest going to Schnucks for all your Sunday game day essentials. They have everything to make your party great, all in one stop. Have you seen their big bucket of wings yet? How about their brand new Schnucks chips and salty snacks? Take a look at the Schnucks party guide called Simply Entertaining. And when you're stocking up as a Schnucks Rewards member, you're always earning points. Stocking up for the big party means heading to Schnucks. Ben Fred Fridays on Scoops with DannyMac.com as we're coming to you from the Lou Fuse Automotive Studios on Scoops with DannyMac.com. And lots to get into. We're going to focus a lot on baseball as Ben Fredrickson did a really interesting article at the beginning of the week. And I wanted to just tear into that because it really did raise a lot of questions because the article was about the potential of a work stoppage about three seasons away, but then it dove into a lot of other topics potentially in baseball, DH coming maybe to the National League, where the Cardinals are right now. And really, I just wanted to tear into to Ben Fredrickson, but I had to wait till Friday.
Yeah, I think you got it right there. You just wanted to tear into me for being one of the few pro-DH lobbyists in St. Louis, which I've been getting torn into. You see my email inbox. It's quite the scene. But no, I think it's well, first of all, it's the middle of January. We got nothing to talk about, and it's a hot topic. And I love this debate. So I kicked the hornet's nest a little bit. So I got to take what comes with it. But I do think that there are not as many anti-DH Cardinals fans out there as some have been led to believe. I think there are a lot more people who are more open to it than the few loud traditionalists like to think. So I'm all for the debate. I enjoy it. I like being a part of it. But I do think the players are going to be for it. And I think it might be something that comes up as that new collective bargaining agreement approaches, because there are a lot of frustrated players who feel like that might be a way to get some of these guys who are not getting contracts some more years of work.
Well, let's start with this. By the way, good morning to you.
You too, my friend.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm doing great, Ben. I loved your article. I agreed with a lot of your article. For fans that didn't see it, what was the subject matter of the article? And I will get into the DH potentially coming to the National League. But what was the gist and the subject matter of the article? What was the premise of the article?
Well, basically kind of looking at this growing cloud above baseball, right? You have the owners and the players, and there's some tension there, and it's not necessarily getting any better. And it could just get you know, more and more intense until the collective bargaining agreement expires, which is after the 2021 season. I know it's difficult for some to look beyond this upcoming season, and I totally get that, but it's really not that far away. And if the players and the owners don't try to start getting on the same page with some of this stuff, then it could lead to a pretty differing viewpoint when that time comes around to negotiate the next CBA. Part of the reason, the biggest frustration point right now for the players is free agency. They feel like, you know, they're looking around and seeing guys who they feel like are good players, you know, get reduced to 1 and 2 year deals that, you know, used to be getting 3, 4, 5, 6 plus year deals. And, you know, they're frustrated by that. Now, the owners are saying, look, we're just, you know, this is the market. This is what the market pays. There are some guys who, you know, deserve more years in our eyes, but there are a lot of guys who don't. And I agree with the owners that they should not be shamed into giving out bigger contracts for players they don't think deserve it. But I think what the players need to do is try to figure out a way to kind of push back against free agency, because the aging curve in a non-steroid era is pretty cruel to guys who are over 30. But unfortunately, the way free agency is constructed right now, most guys are 30 plus by the time they hit free agency for the first time. So if I'm a player, then I'm trying to get that corrected. I'm trying to hit free agency sooner. If baseball is going to get younger and younger, then I don't want to be 30, 31 being a free agent for the first time. So I think that's where players should invest their energy. They shouldn't keep clamoring for contracts that, you know, if we all look around, we can agree most of them are not good. They should fight to get to be free agents sooner. They should fight for fewer arbitration years. They should fight for, you know, less ability of teams to kind of tinker with service time, right? Chris Bryant is an example of that. He's going to be, what, arbitration eligible, I think, 4 times before he's a free agent, in part because the Cubs held him back when they should have probably promoted him if their best interest was winning. The other thing I think players really need to fight against is tanking. I think players should really go after owners who aren't trying to put a competitive product on the team, because that means that good players aren't getting the money they deserve, because teams are more willing to play with, you know, replacement level or worse players because they're not interested in winning. When you've got when you've got a significant amount of teams tanking and not trying to field a good team because they're rewarded by the draft for being bad, I think that hurts players' markets. So I would fight that if I were players as well. I would fight tanking, and I would fight the draft rewarding teams that tank.
Yesterday, I had a podcast with Ken Rosenthal. Right now, it's at scoopswithdannymac.com. Some very interesting looks at maybe some changes from the commissioner coming up. And we did get into what could be the potential of the Players Association and Major League Baseball getting together. And I threw this at Ken, and I'll throw this at you. And this is some of the research I did, and it's really unscientific, but I was just doing looking at a couple of different sources. But I looked at it, and I think it was something like 17 or 18 teams are right now $75 million, roughly, or $80 million under the luxury tax threshold. And then there was something like 8 or 9 teams that right now are about $100 million or more under it. And teams have that right. It doesn't make it right or wrong. They have the right to do that. My point with this, though, with both Ken and you, is the fact that the Players Association signed that deal. And right now, if there's frustration from the players, Ben, they should be upset that they signed that deal. The players signed it. The owners are playing within the rules. It's up to them then to collectively bargain that in the next deal. And I think that's what you're saying, is that they can be frustrated right now, but they need to bargain some of those points that you're talking about and make sure that those points are something that has to be looked at very, very closely. And I agree with many of those points that you're talking about.
Yeah, and I think they should look at that luxury tax and think about if that's having the effect that they want. Because that luxury tax, I understand why it was created. I get it, how it's supposed to work. But the way it's working in reality is that owners are effectively treating it as a hard cap. And they're all trying to say, look, we can't spend beyond that. Well, technically they can. I mean, the Red Sox did and paid up what in the grand scheme of things was a minor penalty and won a World Series. I don't think they're regretting spending beyond the cap, but they were one of two teams that did it last year, with the Nationals being the other, and now they're all racing to get beneath it. They're treating it as if they can't spend beyond it. So I think what players might want to look at is, A, is that that's being used against them because more teams are using it to justify not spending. And B, they might want to look at the opposite. You might want to argue for some sort of a spending floor, if you will, of some sort of amount that should be hit in terms of player payroll if they're going to qualify for certain privileges. Like, you're talking about punishing teams that spend beyond the luxury tax. What about punishing teams that don't spend to a certain point? Or if not punishing them, certainly not rewarding them. I mean, you have a spot now where, think about this, if you're a player and your stance is that teams should spend more on contracts, right? You have teams that are tanking, that are not spending. I mean, you have teams like the Padres, for example, that will take a player in the Rule 5 draft that's not ready for the major leagues, leave him at the major league level all season, even if it means hurting his development, even if it means completely eroding his confidence, simply because, A, it means they get to keep him, B, he's cheap, and they don't have to pay, you know, someone more money to play that position, and C, they're going to lose so many games, they get rewarded by the teams that spend beyond the luxury tax. So the teams that are competing, paying more, trying to win, their money, their penalty money for spending beyond is actually being taken and given to teams that have no interest in winning. That, to me, is a screwed-up system. You're rewarding teams that are trying to be competitive. I would rather see the draft figured out so teams that come close to getting in the postseason and don't, that they're rewarded more than the teams that are intentionally trying to lose 100-plus games a season.
I'm proud to announce a new sponsor for ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, and that's Design Air Heating and Cooling. You know, a few weeks ago, I was having an issue with my furnace, and I made a connection with Seth Goldkamp, who runs Design Air Heating and Cooling. He sent a technician over to my house. Not only did the technician arrive at my house, but so did Seth. They did a tune-up on my furnace. They got it running properly, but they also found a glitch in the system that is now saving me money on my monthly statement. That's all because of Design Air Heating and Cooling. They did that for me and my family. They can do that for you. They're a fourth-generation family-run company. They've been in business for over 100 years because they take care of their customers. The number one train dealer in the Midwest. It's hard to stop a train. Find out more at designairservice.com. Thanks to Seth Goldkamp and Design Air Heating and Cooling. So some of the things that will happen, and you brought this up, as you go to the table, the players give in, owners give in, and a valid point that you brought up is that the players may say, well, we can maybe create a bigger job for one of our members of our association, which would be a designated hitter. That's a high-paying job. Bring that to the National League. That's a really high-paying job. That would mean that you might see a DH in the National League for the St. Louis Cardinals. I was going back and forth with you over the weekend, and I said, I don't like it. And I agree with you. It's probably coming to the National League at some point. That would be part of the negotiations. You got to have give and take. I can tell you, though, Ben, that I emcee a ton of the season ticket holder events. And again, this is very a non-scientific approach.
Sure.
And in those, in emceeing these, it gets asked all the time, do you think that the DH is coming to the National League? And John Mozeliak is in there, or a Michael Gersh or somebody from the front office on the baseball operations side. And, you know, they're asked about it, and then it gets put on the crowd. You know, what do you think? And overwhelmingly, at least in my opinion, it seems like those fans say, man, we don't want it. Now, when you ask, let's say, the Twitter or the Facebook world, my gut tells me that crowd says, yeah, I want it. Now, I would imagine that's a younger audience. So the younger audience, I think, or the younger fan probably wants it. I would think the more maybe the older fan doesn't. Do you agree with that, or what's your stance on it?
I think it is kind of an age, and again, it's not black and white, right? Like, there's young fans who don't want the DH, and there's old fans who do. So this isn't a binary thing. But what I've noticed is that it seems to me like the older crowd says, look, no, we don't want it. We prefer this. We like the strategy of the game, which I completely understand. And it is less, you know, there are less moves to be made when you have that DH. The younger crowd to me says, look, we want to see the best hitters. And if that means, you know, a little less strategy, we're okay with that. So I think it is in some ways age related because, you know, their younger crowd, I think, probably agrees with the current view of the manager. You know, managers are in such a tough spot now where they get blamed for losses, yet when they win, they're told, you know, well, they're just an extension of the front office. I don't agree with that, but I do think younger fans that are more comfortable and more familiar with front office-led teams kind of feel like the GMs and the presidents are the ones making the moves anyway, so go put the best players on the field. But I'm also not quite convinced that there's no strategy to having a DH. I mean, it's a different kind of strategy. I don't think that there's all that much strategy to pitching to a guy who's a walking strikeout, which is what most of the pitchers in baseball are when they go to the plate. Now, there are some exceptions, and that's what makes part of it seeing the pitchers hit cool, right? When Adam Wainwright goes up there and hits a home run, it's fun because no one's expecting that except for him, and he's got a silver slugger to prove that he knows how to hit a little bit. And I'm not knocking Adam, and I'm sure he would not like my side on this discussion, and I respect that. But there are a lot of guys who aren't Adam Wainwright when they go up to the plate. I looked this up in researching that article, and, I mean, this is the worst this year, this past year, was the worst OPS that National League hitters have had since 2000. I think they're not getting better. I guess, you know, so to me there is strategy. There's a little bit more strategy to facing a threatening hitter than there is to facing a pitcher. And I know there are corresponding moves, and I get the argument. I'm not dismissing it. But I do think the younger crowd is saying, look, we'd rather see another hitter. We'd rather see a place, an everyday place for a Jose Martinez in the Cardinals lineup. I think that has something to do with Cardinals fans too, is they see a DH on their team and they can't use him all the time. And I think that maybe has opened some people's eyes.
When you look at a DH coming to the National League, boy, that's big dollars. And that's the point, I think, that you have to look at if you bring a DH to the National League. You're talking about big dollars, big jobs, and also the extension of careers. And that's something that I think also gets overlooked in this as well. A lot of money, but also extending the careers of some of the players in the league right now.
Yeah, well, it's who's, you look around, and I've heard from people who said, you're not really creating jobs because someone's going to get pushed out by that DH spot. And that's accurate. That's a fair statement. And what I tell them is, you're absolutely right, but which player do players care about losing jobs? We don't see players bark when, you know, a young pitcher gets processed. No one is rushing to defend, you know, a Matt Bowman when his arm's used up too early and he can't pitch anymore. Like, the players' union's not writing angry letters about that. The players get fired up when one of the veteran established players is put out to pasture sooner than he wants. I'm not saying this is the right way, but it is the way. I mean, if players cared about young players, then they would try to, you know, do more for the minor leaguers, which, you know, that's a whole nother conversation here, but they completely forget they were ever minor leaguers when they get to the majors, it seems like. And they're most concerned about veteran guys. The veteran guys who can still hit, but have lost a step defensively, are the ones who more often than not right now are getting squeezed out if there's not a DH spot to go to. So I think adding those jobs to the National League would create more work for those players. I think players would probably be approving of that to a large degree. Another thing too, if you're looking at this from a fan perspective, I would argue, and I'd be interested in your take on this, Dan, I would argue that the Cardinals and other National League teams are at a disadvantage when it comes to signing premier hitters in free agency by not having a DH spot that they can factor into that equation late in that player's career. If you're looking at a guy like Bryce Harper.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
If you have to give him, if it's going to take a 10-year contract.
What about re-signing Albert Pujols?
Exactly. But even a better example, you can shift him to a DH. Maybe that money is a little easier to give up, because you're not worried about how he's going to play in the infield, but especially to the non-first baseman, right? A guy who plays in the outfield, for example, like, are you going to be as willing as a team that has the DH to offer that guy a premier contract? I think if I'm a National League team, I'm probably feeling at a little bit of a disadvantage because I can't factor the DH into that equation. So I do think it makes National League teams a little bit less competitive and a little bit more willing to pause when it comes to those kind of deals.
For fans that, by the way, were curious about Manny Machado in 7 years, 175, or Bryce Harper, that was covered also in that podcast with Ken Rosenthal. This is brought to you by...
Have we figured out if the seven-year deal is legit or not? Because it's like it changes every 3 seconds.
It was interesting. You know, the one, I think, aspect that I covered with Ken Rosenthal was, if it's out there at this point, how many other teams now, and it's legitimate, and we don't know, how many other teams now are picking up the phone and saying, we're back in, and we would like to know where you're at. And certainly teams now are kicking the tires on it and just saying, hey, if this is true and this is the best deal you got, we're back in. How does that, you know, or what does that mean for the Cardinals? I don't think it means anything, but I think for the landscape of all of baseball, yeah, I think a lot of other teams, Ben, would probably be back in, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's 7 years, but then I've, you know, his agent has come out and said that wasn't the offer. There's a lot of posturing going on right now.
Which makes it fun.
Between these two guys. I mean, these agents are competing against each other, too. People shouldn't overlook that fact.
Hair Saloon for Men, home base right here in St. Louis, and we're going to talk MLS in just a moment. Founded in 1997, they now have 16 locations in St. Louis. You'll receive the perfect haircut. Hair Saloon keeps client notes on each customer, so on each visit, you can be assured they know what you want, and they'll do that in the privacy of your own cutting station. Complimentary beverage, relaxing shampoo, hot towel and a mint, complimentary shoe shine, all of that for just $22. Extra $5, get a stress-relieving scalp massage or neck shave. And I think definitely that extra $5 would be useful for my friend here, Ben Fredrickson, because he's a little stressed out right now. Also, for Blues fans, join the party this weekend for all St. Louis Blues action this season at one of Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill's 11 area locations. You can score a hat trick of savings, great food, drink specials available during every Blues game. The Bud Family Beer Specials, $4 Jack Daniels Cocktails, $5.99 Blue Sampler Appetizer, the $4 Blue Note Bombs, and the all-new Golden Bread Cocktail, all for just $5. They have a brand-new menu. Check it out and get those specials at Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill. You need the stress reliever, don't you?
I do need a haircut before I go to the baseball writer's dinner on Sunday, so maybe I'll check it out. If I drop your name, will I get a discount or something?
You probably would, yeah. And it'd be probably a good thing to clean up a little bit, all right? I'm just going to throw that out there.
Enough.
Clean yourself up.
My bosses tell me the same thing.
Well,
so
good.
I guess I'll take your word for it.
Thank you. I know you heard the podcast this week, and we talked about it last week. We were hoping to hear a little bit more from Carolyn Kendall Betts and Jim Cavanaugh. They did that right here on the website with scoopswithdannymac.com. And you listened to the podcast. They answered, I think, basically every question that a lot of fans were curious about, where they were with land acquisition and lease, and they were not awarded the 27th team. And to me, that was a foregone conclusion. But for the casual fan that has been following this, they thought, oh, no, what does that mean for St. Louis? Well, they've always been focused on number 28. So you listened to the interview. What did you take away from Carolyn and Jim in that interview?
Well, I think the most positive thing for soccer fans was that they're, you know, in constant communication with the league. They feel like they're in a good spot. You know, the stadium renderings are close, if not, you know, completed, but not yet revealed, but getting there. And they've still got, you know, plans for a meeting and a trip, and all these things are still in the works. And I think the main thing was like, okay, telling everybody to take a breath. Austin was never going to be the biggest competitor for St. Louis. When the league announced that it was keeping its team in Columbus, it said at that time that Austin was going to get an expansion team. So for those who are following this, it was clear right then that 27 was going to Austin. So this whole big reveal in Austin was really not a surprise. They had already said that, but there was initially talk of the league potentially relocating the team from Columbus to Austin, which would have still left two expansion teams. But when the new ownership group stepped up in Columbus to keep the team there, and the departing owner was awarded an expansion team, it was clear that 27 was going to Austin. So I think now it's even easier to understand. It's one team up for grabs and, you know, 3 to 4 cities competing for it. You have Detroit, you have Phoenix, you have Sacramento. If they, you know, come into some sort of ownership situation that appeals to the league, I think Sacramento, if it had the money, would probably be most appealing. But right now it doesn't have what St. Louis has. It doesn't have what Phoenix has. It doesn't have somebody willing to put the money on the line. So St. Louis is in that group where they're coming down to the wire trying to get 28. The fascinating thing to me is, like, Phoenix, for example, I think has been pretty adamant that if they don't get the team, if they don't get the 28th team, they're going to keep trying. And the league has said, and it's in its last, I think before the MLS Cup, they said, look, we are going to expand beyond 28. We're not going to stop at 28. Initially, there had been some discussion about could they stop the league, and they're going to keep growing. What I don't think is necessarily the case is that if St. Louis does not become Team 28, we don't have a sense of if they would try to rebound and go after 29 or wait for 30. I think there's a decent chance that St. Louis would tell the league, look, we've done everything you wanted. We checked every box. If we're not 28, then we're out. And, you know, I know that's something that's scary for soccer fans to hear, but I do think that's a way St. Louis can put some pressure on the league, is saying, you know, you have other places that say they're willing to wait. We're not willing to wait, so it's now or never. And, you know, maybe that's a way to get this thing locked up. But I think it could drag on until, you know, maybe April. But I think that's probably the tentative timeline of when you're if you're a diehard soccer fan, of if you're going to know whether or not you're getting a team. I could see it being, you know, around April, hopefully before May.
You know, Jim, I mentioned that. That was the question I asked him. What's the timeline? He said, well, probably 4 to 6 months. I'm just not sure what else Jim and Carolyn have to do. Now, they have not been, you know, saying, well, this is the last hurdle we need to get to. I'm curious with your sources, Ben, if you've heard that. You know, what has been the final hurdle or hurdles that they have to get to through local government or land acquisition? Have you heard any detriment, anything that's come out negative? I have not. I mean, they've done everything that they've been supposed to be doing, and everything has been positive that's come out, whether it be from them, which is going to be positive for the most part, or those that have been, you know, saying, well, they've got to do this and it's not going to. I can't tell you anybody that's come out and been negative about it. Nobody.
No, I don't think anybody here locally has. I think even what's been interesting for me is that even some of the folks who are, I guess, perceived to be anti money for stadiums and things of that nature, and not even anti, but very critical, which, look, I'm a fan of going over everything with a fine tooth comb these days, because if St. Louis isn't going to learn from its previous mistakes, then it's going to repeat them. So I'm okay with people saying, let's really dig into this. But more and more, the people who are really digging into it are saying, look, we think this is pretty good. I mean, the business reporters at the Post-Dispatch have said, I think this is pretty good. I mean, you look at even some of the aldermen who have been on the opposite end of things like this in the past, like Scott Ogilvie, who's notorious for really wanting to find reasons to, you know, say, hey, let's hold up and look at this a little bit more closely. He's been in favor of it. You have the alderman with the overwhelming vote to say, and you know, we're gonna move this forward to show the league that we're willing to get these things looked at and passed if they do get a team. There's a lot of things right now that are just kind of going to be waiting until the league says, yeah, we're coming. Now the league, I think the league is not going to commit until it has to, right? I mean, we wonder why baseball free agency moves so slow, and the answer is because it doesn't have to move fast. MLS doesn't have to move fast right now. It can literally wait until, you know, it can give Sacramento every chance to find some money. It can give, you know, someone a chance to blow them away. It can give more time if somebody falls through. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that St. Louis didn't look like it was going to be able to pick itself up off the mat, and look what happened. So I think MLS has realized that it can play, it can kind of dominate the ball, if you will. It can hold it until it sees the opportunity to strike. And I don't think they're going to be rushed as much as St. Louis would like for it to be. Now, the encouraging thing is it really does sound like there's a very good relationship between the ownership group and the league. And And that's been the case. And I do think the league is looking at enterprise going, okay, we see an opportunity here for not just a team, but for some pretty significant sponsorship opportunities. I mean, enterprise is not a brand that I think the league will turn its nose up at. So some of this might just be, you know, standoffishness for the purpose of, you know, making them wait. But I wrote it a while back. I said, look, the St. Louis doesn't have that much left to prove to the league. And St. Louis did everything the league said it wanted to see. So at some point the ball was in their court, and it would be nice if, you know, if they would let St. Louis know what they're seeing publicly. But I think, you know, Garber is telling every city right now what they want to hear. And that's the thing to pay attention to, is what does he say? Because he's telling every place that has a realistic shot that they're looking good. St. Louis is not the only area hearing that, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I mean, with the NFL, it's kind of been hard deadlines or hard dates when you have these relocation.
Fluid.
Yeah, you've got relocation dates or meetings, and you kind of know where you stand. Where in this case, as you mentioned, you go quiet, you go dark as a league, and you use it as leverage. And if you say in those league meetings, yeah, maybe we'll think about 29 or 30. And in the back of your mind, maybe you have an idea that St. Louis could be 28. Then those other cities get their act together, and all of a sudden you do have 29 or 30. And I think something, and maybe you agree or don't, but I think it's very, very important that if you are an inclusive league, which MLS has talked about, and with soccer, to have female-led ownership in a major professional sport with Carolyn Kendall Betts and their family, I think that's huge. It's a global statement that they have a seat at the table, if you will. I think it's major. And yes, the Taylor family has big money, as you mentioned, and the Enterprise name and that brand is massive. But to have that seat at the table and female-led ownership, I mean, Ben, that is a big, big factor in my mind, and something that MLS can hang their hat on and say, look, we've got this, we're proud of it, and we're proud of the people that represent our franchise at the table. And let's face it, they are very good people and would represent the league very, very well.
Well, yeah, when you look for negatives about this group, I don't know what you come up with.
No.
They have the money, they have the brand, they have, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to present it as like it's a niche. I mean, it is something that.
And I don't either. I think it's something that is very important. Yeah.
Good publicity. There would be a lot of, you know, things that they could and rightfully should promote if they were to have an ownership group that could tout those credentials. And, you know, it's not for simply being able to say it either. I mean, and it was, you know, Jim made a point in his discussion with you about Carolyn, you know, being the best person to lead this. It wasn't as if they said, we want this to be a selling point. Let's make Carolyn the lead. I mean, she's leading this because she's the most qualified, and not necessarily in terms of what she knows about soccer, but in terms of her ability to lead people, to organize this movement. And you can tell in what they have done and the way they've gone about this, how meticulous they have been, how thorough, that, you know, that's proving to be right. So, yeah, continue to list the things that are positive, but one of the ones that really shouldn't be overlooked too is the fact that Enterprise, I mean, if you watch the World Cup game, you know, the Atlanta owner is the Home Depot guy, right? And there were
Arthur
Home Depot
Blank.
Commercials,
yep.
And Home Depot signs. You couldn't go 3 minutes without seeing something Home Depot related. Would it not be that way if Enterprise was involved with this? So I think the league, for as much as it wants to appear to be neutral right now and appear to be, you know, weighing all of its options, I think it'd be borderline crazy to let this opportunity get away. So they're going to play it as they see fit. A lot of people believe that Enterprise has kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge from the league that they're going to get a team if they do all the things necessary. I don't know that that's the case. They certainly are making it sound like that's not the case. But I do think the league, MLS, would be a little a little Looney Tunes to have this so close here in St. Louis and to find a reason to not make that connection unless something just drastically falls through that none of us are predicting right now.
And finally, tonight, SLU takes on St. Joe's, nationally televised game. They are the only undefeated team in the A-10. They have defeated Rhode Island, UMass, LaSalle, Fordham. They're doing it without Cartier Gordon. Hey, bottom line, Travis Ford, he's winning games, and he's doing it without Gordon. And this team is finding ways to win. They're playing tough basketball. It hasn't been pretty. It's been ugly. But bottom line is, Ben Fredrickson, you find a way to win.
Hey, man, an undefeated record to start conference play is pretty, and I don't care how many rock fights you have to win to get there. There are a lot of teams across the country that would like this start. They are the only undefeated team left to start the A-10 play. And, man, they are. I'd say this about SLU, and I mean it kind of in a good way. They can, you know, they can go out and play down to a team's level one night and then go out and play a good team and raise up to its level the next. And a lot of very good teams have that trait. But while they sometimes make things hard on themselves, what they also do is they find ways to make plays in close situations. And that's a character trait. You either have it or you don't. Some teams can develop it. But if they don't have it by now, you don't get it. And they've got it. They play defense. They are tough. They have an outstanding leader in Javon Best. He's one of my favorite players in the country to watch just because he's such an all-around leader and player. He does everything. And they're getting some, you know, they're getting some meaningful minutes from guys who've stepped into the spotlight after Cartier Gordon left. I mean, we said after Cartier Gordon left, look, if it's going to hurt SLU, it's going to hurt them next season and beyond. It's not necessarily going to hurt them this season. And I don't think the record, I don't want to put it all on Cartier, but look at the record since he left the team. It's not a coincidence. They faced adversity. They're coming together. They're playing better than they have, and they're just playing tough. And they're constantly fighting themselves at the free throw line, but I think they're making some improvements there. And I think they're just growing up as a team, and they play hard. And when you can take that act on the road, winning road games in conference play, it's a cliche, but it is so extremely hard. And I think they're going to have an advantage when they start coming back home, because people are going to want to show up and watch this team, and
no
they
doubt.
Deserve that. They have earned attendance at Chaffetz. So that place for Butler was rocking, and I think that they should have that every time they're home, because they're going out and giving their fans the kind of team that you can be proud of. I mean, they're a team that could wind up, you know, being ranked. They certainly look like they could get to an NCAA tournament right now, and I think they're playing with a confidence that's growing every time they go out and win one of these games.
Ben, always great to visit with you. Have a great Friday. Have fun at the Cardinals Caravan. Look forward to reading you on Sunday especially, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
Sounds good, man. Talk soon.